All right. Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to Waterfront Church. If you got your Bibles, open to Romans chapter 10, and then we're going to jump back into our study of Luke chapter 9. Have you ever felt beautifully messy before? Okay. Have you ever felt beautifully messy? Now, those are kind of words that don't typically go together, but this idea of a beautiful mess comes together when the outside world would look at you and go, what happened to you? All right. Or what have you been through? Or what mess did you just walk through? And yet on your side, you go, I am lucky to be alive. I'm lucky to make it through. And even though it may look like a mess to the outside world, there is something truly beautiful taking place. No better example of that than moving, all right? Any of you ever moved specifically in this city before, all right? And you don't just move in this city from house to house or place to place. You move floors a lot of different times, and you have to move up the stairs and all that stuff. It is just an absolute mess, right? If you've ever moved before, you understand the beautiful mess concept. Because by the skin of your teeth, you have to get out of one place and into another so that you don't have to continue paying rent both places, right? Or so the new tenant can come in. Here's the deal. When we moved from here to our house, we lived in the 100 for 2 years, loved it. When we moved from here in the Navy Yard from the 100 to our row home that we live in now, we had to get out of our place by midnight, one of those particular nights, turn in the keys. Otherwise, we were going to have to pay a pretty hefty penalty. And so for us, here was the deal. In the middle of the night, we are throwing stuff into the car, trying to move. Plus, a lot of you do this. You call every acquaintance you ever had, trying to get them to help you move, right? In fact, we used to say this in Texas because so many people had trucks. If you have a truck up here, everyone is your friend. You know what I mean? They will call you if they've got to move, okay? So here's the deal. We get to that final point and we get all the boxes moved over. And if you came over to our house at that point and saw the boxes lining the hallways, you saw the clothes piled in the corner, most likely you would have walked in and gone, this is a mess. But we would have gone, woohoo, we made it out of the apartment, right? We don't have to pay any other deposit. That is a beautiful mess, right? The outside world might look at it as something that's messy, that's got all this different junk attached to it. But for you, you know the mess produced something very, very beautiful. Moving is an easy example. But when it comes to life and our walk with God, this world is filled with beautiful messes. And honestly, those are the best stories when it comes to our faith. When it looked like there was absolutely no way that God could prevail, and yet he comes through at the last minute and takes care of us. If you're looking at your scripture, look at Romans chapter 10, verses 13 through 15. Paul outlines the idea of this beautiful mess. Here's what he says. Romans chapter 10, verse 13. He says, "For everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved." Stop right there, underline and highlight that. That's a separate message for another day, but it should be preached every single week. God's desire is that everyone would believe in Jesus Christ and be saved, get eternity with God in heaven instead of eternity separated from God in hell. That's God's desire. Everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. Paul then goes on to talk about the mess. He says, "How then can they call on the one that they have not believed in? And how can they believe in the one whom they've not heard about? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them?" Look at verse 15. "And how can they preach unless they're sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news." Circle, highlight, and underline that last part of the verse. What the Apostle Paul says here is that the world is full of mess. It's full of sin, and it needs to be forgiven. And Paul says, if we don't go out and share it with the world, how are they going to understand it? How are they going to grasp it? How can they understand Jesus unless he's been preached to them, unless he's been explained to them? He then follows it up with the beautiful verse, "How beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news." Now remember, Paul is speaking to a culture that travels by what my dad used to call the shoe leather express from place to place, all right? The wealthy and the powerful can afford animals to ride on from place to place. They can afford a chariot. They can afford a coach. But for the basic person, they are traveling from place to place in their communities and beyond by their shoes, by their feet. So as you're walking up and down this road, you're in the elements. If it rains, you're walking through the mud. If animals have left a mess, you're walking through the mess. If robbers or bandits are out there, you're having to pass by them, and it's all crazy and just nuts. If animals are out there and have caused problems, it's incredibly exhausting if you've walked miles at a time. And here's what Paul says. When you carry the gospel message, even your dirty, nasty feet are considered to be beautiful. That's the beautiful mess. The idea that the gospel message is so powerful, so life-transforming, that even the messiest part of us would look genuine and authentic. even the messiest part of us, could be celebrated, just like the house full of boxes when you finally move and get out of the previous space. If you're taking notes today, here's our big million-dollar question. How do we live like Jesus in the midst of the mess? How do we live like Jesus in the midst of the mess? This particular passage, and by the way, flip over to Luke chapter 9 and we'll jump back into our study. Luke chapter 9, and we're going to start in verse 37 today. For the city that we live in that is so image-driven, this particular passage is powerful because what we would like life to look like is the mountaintop of the passage that we studied last week. Last week we read in Luke chapter 9 about the transfiguration when Jesus is on the mountaintop and Elijah and Moses appear. He's up there with his best friends, Peter, James, and John. And man, the audible voice of God shows up in this cloud. I mean, it's just the most incredible, amazing spiritual experience in the first part of Luke chapter 9. But this part, as soon as Jesus comes down the mountainside, there is an absolute mess waiting for him. In this city, we would like for it to look like the mountaintop all the time, right? We would like for it to look clean. We would like for it to look nice. We would like for all the problems to come at a regular pace so that we could solve them one at a time. And that's not the way that life works. When we come down off the mountainside after a powerful experience with God, there is an absolute mess waiting for us. Look at Luke chapter 9, and let's read verse 37. As we address the question today, how do we live like Jesus in the midst of the mess? He's going to give us the perfect description today. Verse 37, it says, the next day when he came down from the mountain, underline that part, the next day when he came down from the mountain, a large crowd met him. Now, this passage begins with Jesus coming from a powerful spiritual experience, once-in-a-lifetime moment, with his best friends up on the mountainside, and it says the next day, as he comes down, what's waiting for him is a massive group of people that want something from him. This is very interesting, because many scholars say what happened in the previous part of the passage happened at nighttime. So here's what's interesting. It is possible that Jesus and the disciples have been on this spiritual high all night long, spending time with God, and they are fully exhausted as they come down the mountain, and there is a big set of problems waiting for him. Not just any problems, but other people's problems, right? Few things are more exhausting than not just your problems, but other people's problems. You ever done that before? We've been on vacation before, we've come back, and we thought to ourselves, oh, this is great, we're so relaxed. This is so nice. We got to spend some time together as a family. And I'm telling you, as soon as you get back and turn that cell phone on, or as soon as you get back and walk through the door, somebody else's problem is waiting for you. If it's your problem, you can plan around it. If it's somebody else's problem, it just sucks the life right out of you. Here's what happens with Jesus. He comes down the mountain. They've had this amazing experience, and a mess is waiting for him. If you're taking notes, how do we live like Jesus in the midst of the mess? Number one, we have to leave the mountain, all right? Number one, we have to leave the mountain. It is going to be incredibly tempting. For after you've experienced God in a powerful way, or you've gotten rest and renewal through a vacation that you've taken or some time off from work, it's going to be incredibly tempting to not want to leave the mountain, to want to stay up there. Maybe not literally, but in your mind, mentally, that you would stay there on the mountainside. I forced Autumn to watch a situational comedy back in the day called The Office. Did you guys watch The Office before? Okay, famous sitcom. I used to make Autumn watch it, and so if you are someone who is an Office hater, just know our house was divided. Okay, that you fit in that deal. If you're an Office lover, this illustration will speak to you. We're rewatching some of the episodes just for fun while they're still on Netflix. And one of the episodes that I always thought was really funny is the episode where Michael Scott goes to Jamaica and he comes back from Jamaica. You remember this episode? He comes back from Jamaica, and as he walks into the office, he's got this braid in his hair with the little beads on it from Jamaica, and he's wearing that thing in there. And again, he's in this business office in a full suit, but he's got the bead and the little braid in his hair, and he walks in. And not only that, but as he walks in, he is carrying a huge steel drum, and he's wanting the people in the office to listen while he plays that. He keeps saying, like, what's that song, Hot, Hot, Hot? He he keeps saying, feeling hot, 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 and he keeps hitting the steel drum. It was just, it's just so ridiculous. And the people in the office are watching him like, you are crazy, right? That's kind of how they work with Michael Scott all the time, but they're watching him like he's crazy. Well, as it goes on, he decides, I want the people in the office to live like we lived in Jamaica. So he goes to the party planning committee and he goes, you guys need to plan a party, a Jamaican luau tonight. And they're like, in one day? He goes, yes, by this afternoon, plan the Jamaican luau so that we all get together and we can all live like we lived in Jamaica. And the entire story is him just being crazy because his mind was still on vacation. His mind was still on the mountain. When we do that as Christians, it looks just like Michael Scott in the office. People look at us and they go, okay, you had a great experience at youth camp. Okay, you had a great experience at VBS. Okay, you had a great experience at church on Sunday morning. But if you are in the world, but not really in the world, what Scripture calls it in the world, but not of the world, is the way we're supposed to be. Sometimes what we do is we're not of the world and we're not in the world. We just kind of walk around and kind of do our thing. Then the world looks at us like we're crazy and they can't help us. They can't follow us. And we're no earthly good to them as well. There's an old saying, you can be too heavenly minded that you're no earthly good. You ever heard that before? You can be too heavenly minded that you're no earthly good. The way that we get into that mentality is when we make the decision that we want it to be youth camp every day, or that we want it to be the mission trip every day, or that we want it to be vacation every day, that we want our mind to be free. And listen, guys, those moments are special. But for Jesus, Jesus didn't come down the mountain and go, office hours are at 8 a.m. tomorrow, all right? You can show up just like everybody else at the front door. No, he's the Son of God. We're supposed to follow his example. What does he do as he comes down exhausted from the mountain? He meets with the crowd and he begins to meet their needs. How do we live like Jesus in the midst of the mess? Leave the mountain and plug into what's happening in the world. Some of you played football or have watched football before, all right? What do the players do before they go out and run the play? They gather for a huddle. The huddle is the moment where the game plan is put together. What if football was all about this incredible game plan that was put together and the players never went out and actually ran a play? It would be ridiculous. That is where they are, not of the world and also not in the world. What you have to do is gather together, have those powerful spiritual moments where God puts the game plan together, and then go out and execute. Be Christ's hands and feet to the world. If we don't do that, then they think we're weird. We're like Michael Scott with the braid. We're like Michael Scott with the steel drum. They look at us and they think we're crazy. If you're taking notes, a world in need is sent to you by God and not by the enemy. Let me say that one more time. A world in need is sent to you by God and not by the enemy. Sometimes after you're coming off a spiritual high moment or a time that you've met with God, sometimes the temptation is to look at the world and the mess that shows up around you and for you to go, oh, they're just distracting me. Oh, they're just distracting me. Oh, they're people that are just pressing in and they just want something from me. After the spiritual high moment, compassion in your life, even if you struggle with compassion, should be at an all-time high to where you want to reach out and help. Remember, the mess that's brought to you is not sent by the enemy to distract you. It's sent by God for you to be his hands and feet and his mouthpiece to the situation. If you can start changing that perspective, you would be surprised at how you would feel encouraged when you come back to work and not discouraged. A world in need is sent to you by God and not sent to you by the enemy. It begs this question, are you sinfully fighting to stay on the mountain? Are you sinfully fighting to stay on the mountain? Is everything about your life trying to push so that you can get back to that spiritual high moment? When the truth is, that spiritual high is like gas for your tank so that you can move forward and do what God's intended for you to do. Jesus comes down the mountain. Look at what happens next in Luke chapter 9, verse 38. Not only is there a mess waiting, but there's a really big mess that his disciples have created. Look at what happens next, verse 38. It says, a man in the crowd called out, teacher, I beg you, look at my son, for he's only a child. A spirit seizes him, underline seizes him, and suddenly he screams. It throws him into convulsions, and he foams at the mouth. Underline foams at the mouth. It's one of the only places that word foams is used. And foams at the mouth. It scarcely ever leaves him, and it's destroying him. I begged your disciples to drive it out, but they could not. Stop right there for just a minute. Jesus has gone up to the mountainside, and as he comes back down after this awesome experience, not only is there a crowd waiting for him, but leading the charge for the crowd is a very specific and incredibly difficult situation. Not only does this guy have a tough situation where his son is being seized by this spirit and it's causing him to foam at the mouth, it's a very, very messy ordeal. Not only that, but his people have not been able to solve the problem, all right? You ever gone somewhere, some of you who are managers in this room, you've gone somewhere on vacation or you've gone somewhere for a meeting, and when you come back, there's not just a mess, there's a mess that your people were unable to solve that's waiting for you. That's what happens for Jesus. He's got customer service there letting him know, we didn't know how to address this customer. What are we supposed to do here? If you're taking notes, how do we live like Jesus in the midst of the mess? Number one, we got to leave the mountain. And number two, we've got to address what's in front of us. Address what's in front of you. In this particular case, Jesus probably would have rather eased in with an easier scenario, but leading the charge was this man. He could not pass him by. For us to live like Jesus in the mess means that we don't look past tough situations when they present themselves right there in front of us. Address what's in front of you, even if it's difficult. This man says, I begged your disciples for help, and now I beg you, please have mercy on my son. Sometimes what we get stuck doing is we sometimes carry this attitude that we are specialists, and our specialist attitude is, unless it falls into my specialty, I will refer this person to someone else for help, when the truth is they are screaming for help right in front of us. Here's this man, foaming at the mouth, needing help. His son is going through this incredibly tumultuous time, and he comes and says, I've been asking your disciples for help, but they couldn't do anything. I need you to help me. Jesus very easily could have said, not today, make an appointment. He very easily could have said, not my area of expertise, go see Bartholomew, all right? He very easily could have pushed this off to somebody else, but that's not the example that he set for us. This man begs for help, and Jesus addresses what's in front of him. I've told this story before, but it's one of my favorites. My little brother, I love him very, very dearly, and I'll never forget, we went one time for a really, really nice dinner at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in New Orleans. Now, our family, what we would always do is we would always look for wherever the off-season was for different places, and we would go there. So I do not necessarily recommend New Orleans vacation in the heat of July, all right? But we went, we got to stay very, very cheaply at one of the hotels there, and then my dad said, I've always wanted us to go eat at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel. So we go, and we sat down, had this meal. It was wonderful, but we're sitting down in this courtyard. It was just beautiful. If you've ever been to New Orleans before, it's just a beautiful, beautiful, fun city. Music you can hear in the background. It was just wonderful. Extremely high class. We're sitting there, and my brother gets a little bit sick. And my brother, in the courtyard, loses his dinner right there in the middle of the courtyard. Without being too graphic, just loses his dinner right there in the middle of the courtyard. My mom gets up to walk my brother upstairs, but there is this mess in the courtyard. As we're sitting there, myself and my sister, as we're sitting there, there's the mess, and thank goodness it was late and a lot of the other people had left, so it's just us right there. The manager comes up and sees it and goes, oh, this is most unfortunate. This is most unfortunate. And he goes, we will get someone else to clean this up. Don't worry. And I could tell he was talking to himself and not to us. All right. We will get someone else to clean this up. He gets on the radio and calls for someone to come and clean it up. The next person down the chain shows up, sees the mess, looks at us and goes, oh, this was most unfortunate. Most unfortunate. He gets on the radio and calls someone else to clean it up. After four people, finally, a guy shows up, and clearly there is no one else he can call, all right? So he stops and cleans up the mess. Here's what happens to a lot of us, especially in this city. Man, we look at people, and there is a mess sitting right there in front of us. And you know what? It's not your job description, but you can do something. You can do something. And as the mess is sitting there, we just look and go, oh, most unfortunate. I can't believe we'd live in a society that would have something like this take place. Someone should do something about this. I'm going to make a phone call, or I'm going to write an email. And that's really my area of expertise. I'm not telling you that you need to jump in and solve every problem. But if there is a mess in front of you and you can do something, then do it. In this particular case, Jesus addresses what's in front of him and doesn't say, it's not the right time, or I'm going to pass it down the chain for someone else to take care of. For you seminary students, and we have a few seminary students in the room. Oh, very cool. Well, this is for you, all right? This is for you. Here's what we got. For some of our seminary students are in the room, we call this the Battle of the Pharisee. I went to seminary myself. The Battle of the Pharisee is that sometimes when you go to school, it can become such a head knowledge deal when you study Scripture that all of a sudden everything is in theory and you forget about the world that you've got around you that you're called to minister to. Here's what would happen. Autumn and I had a very, very special thing while we were at seminary. We had some neighbors that didn't have particularly great boundaries. And so what they would do is after we would finish school, some of you heard me tell a few of these stories before, one of our neighbors would sit in the middle of the staircase so that he could ask spiritual questions about his life when I would come home from work. And he wasn't ever accosting. He just would have these questions. And we'd come back from seminary, and it was like the mountaintop experience sometimes. Such deep intellectual stuff. And I'm telling you, things that we were trying to process and break down, but waiting for us in the stairwell on our way home was a practical problem. Was somebody who needed to know not how the heck knowledge worked or not how all these different factors fit together. They needed to know how to get through the day. They needed to know how to get through their simple issue. They needed to know how to pay their rent. And here they are sitting in the middle of the stairwell. What if I had said, sorry, it's way below my pay grade to help you? What if I had said, sorry, I've got to step over you and step past you because someone else who has not been to seminary needs to handle this issue? In this city, we struggle with that because you are very smart people. Very, very smart people. We've got to make the decision that there is nothing that's below our pay grade, right? It doesn't mean that you have to do everything. But if there's something in front of you, a problem to address that you can help with, the example of Christ is that we do something. That you don't step over them or pass their information on to somebody else. You do something if you can. You do something if you can. If you're taking notes, a little tweetable quote, no problem is too messy for Jesus. No problem is too messy for Jesus. If there was anybody who could have pulled rank and said, I'm too smart for this, it would have been the Son of God. But no problem was too messy for Jesus. That begs this question. Are you withholding Christ from someone bleeding out in front of you? Are you withholding Christ from someone bleeding out in front of you? Have you reached the point where honestly you say, I am too good for this, or I have got too much to do to help with this issue? If someone is bleeding out in front of us, it is God's call for us to help them, for us to take care of our brother or sister. Look at Luke chapter 9. Let's look at verse 41. Luke 9, verse 41. It says this. Look at this. This is as heavy a rebuke as you get from Jesus. He says, oh, unbelieving and perverse generation, how long shall I stay with you and put up with you? Bring your son here. Stop right there for just a minute. He is not talking to the dad. Jesus is talking to the disciples. He looks at them and says, why did you brush this guy off? Why didn't you stay with him until the problem was fixed? He looks at him and says, man, oh, believing and perverse generation, unbelieving and perverse generation, how long shall I stay with you and put up with you? Bring your son here. Look at this. Even while the boy was coming, underline even while the boy was coming, the demon threw him to the ground in a convulsion. But Jesus rebuked the evil spirit, healed the boy, look at this, and gave him back to his father. Underline gave him back to his father. That actually is a beautiful, beautiful set of words, and we'll talk about that in just a second. In this passage, what we've got is as Jesus rebukes the disciples, and that's the first thing he does, he then turns and says to the man, come with me and bring your son. But as the son is traveling with Jesus, he has the convulsion, he has this spirit seizing right there in the middle of him following Jesus to do the right thing. If you're taking notes, how do we live like Jesus in the midst of the mess? Number one, we got to leave the mountain. Number two, we got to address what's in front of us. And number three, expect imperfection. Expect imperfection. This boy is walking with Jesus. He's walking, trying to get to the point where he can be healed. And as the boy heads on the right direction, he is seized by that evil spirit and convulses on the ground. The word in Greek that's used there for him to be seized and to convulse, that word actually was a word used when it referred to a boxer. And it was when somebody was knocked out in boxing in the ancient world. That's the word that's used. As he's going, trying to do do the right thing, as he's trying to do right and follow Jesus, all of a sudden, like a boxer's punch, he gets knocked out, and it seizes him so quickly, he falls to the ground just like a boxer who's laid someone out in one punch. Sometimes what we do when we try to follow Christ in the mess is we mean well, but our attitude becomes, I'll help until it gets really difficult. I'll help until it takes a turn. So as Jesus is leading this guy and as he's following him on the journey, there's a moment of the unexpected and there's a moment when imperfection hits. Sometimes our attitude can become, I'll help somebody, but they get one strike and then I'm out, right? One strike and then I'm out. For some of you in this room who are trying to deal with issues with family members, and that family member has harmed you and hurt you emotionally very deeply, maybe even physically very deeply. But to live like Christ, you are trying very hard to love them and give them another chance. The big battle in your brain and in your spirit a lot of times is, I'll let them stick around as long as it's a perfect game that they're pitching. I'll let them stick around, but at the first sign of screw up, I'm drawing the line and then I am done with them. That's not the case here for Jesus. As the boy is following him, as he's doing right, when the imperfection hits, Jesus doesn't go, whoa, 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 as long as you were staying behind me, I was going to help you. No, he continues to expect the imperfection and he continues to take care of him. We have a sweet 3-year-old daughter named Harper. Harper's wonderful. Our sweet little 3-year-old, if she's happy, everybody's happy. And if she's unhappy, she makes sure that everybody knows it, all right? Some of you know Harper. She's wonderful. She has the Randall spirit. I mean, I'm telling you, she's also got my vocal cords. She's loud. And again, if she's unhappy, everybody knows it. If you've had young children around before, it's not every kid, but if you've got the loud kid will make sure that they are heard. And here's what happens for a 3-year-old. The best time for a 3-year-old is when you show up at an event. They get so excited. But you know on the back end, there is going to come a time when you have to leave the event that they love so much, and then they will be heard. You know what I mean? They will be heard. The kids love VBS this week. I mean, just absolutely loved it. They looked forward to it all day long. And we did not look forward to the moment we would leave VBS all day long. Because they loved it so much, but there's a moment of imperfection when they just scream their heads off because they want to stay. It's not every kid, but it just happens to be my kids, all right? Okay? It's the same way with our sweet son, Jack. Jack has got some sensory issues he's working through. And for Jack, what we had to learn is that it was not going to be the greatest day of Jack's life is not a perfect little perfect game stretch. The greatest day of Jack's life also includes a little bit of a meltdown. Jack gets so overwhelmed by the excitement of the moment that what he does sometimes at the church carnivals is he'll fall to the ground, cup his ears, and he'll kind of curl into a little bit of a ball. For him, in the beginning, I used to think as the father, he hates this, he dislikes it, what's the deal? All the other parents are staring at us in this moment. You know what we've learned over time? That means he's so excited he can't see straight. For him, he's so excited, he'll cover his ears, and you look down in the midst of the ball, and he's grinning from ear to ear because he's so excited. It looks like this imperfect moment, and yet, good is still happening. Here's the picture. When you help somebody, if you're expecting it to look like a movie, or you're expecting it to look like a perfectly segmented sitcom, that's not life. Expect imperfection. Know that when you help somebody, when you reach out to the messy world, the odds are that the mess is not done, that there's still going to be difficulty, that you're still going to have to be diplomatic, even in the midst of a tough situation, that you're going to have to trust God for wisdom and insight to navigate those tough waters. And in the end, it's beautiful. Sweet Harper, screaming every night at the end of VBS, could not wait to get back the following night. Sweet Jack, covering his ears, curled into a ball, could not wait for the next moment so that he could step out and play at the carnival. When imperfection shows up, are you the person that goes, I'm out. I'm done. I tried. Got my gold Bible sticker in heaven. I could have gotten a huge treasure chest, but I'm just going to get a few dollars and I will take it and go at this point rather than deal with the mess. If that's you, you are missing the most beautiful payday possible. Don't miss out on the best stories. there when you're able to navigate the mess and there is no perfect game. When the imperfect shows up, Jesus doesn't turn and run. The beautiful part's at the end of the story too. After we get the knockout punch of the seizing spirit hitting this young man, the last part of the passage is Jesus casts out the demon, and then the picture is that Jesus lifts this man up with his own arms and hands him to the Father. He gives him back to his son. He gives the son back to his Father. That's the picture. What starts as a knockout punch ends up in Christ gently giving us back what's been lost. How do you get that story? You don't wish for the perfect game. You navigate the imperfection. Let's keep moving. Oh, by the way, a little tweetable quote here. Messy moments can still happen even when someone is trying to do the right thing. Let me say that one more time. And some of you who are trying to navigate family members right now, this is for you. Messy moments can still happen even when someone is trying to do the right thing. Don't take the messy moment as a sign that people are not trying. Is that a good word? Don't take the messy moment as a sign that people are not trying. On this one, where there's smoke, there's not always fire. Sometimes it's a remnant of the former life, and the Lord is changing them slowly. Messy moments can still happen, even when someone is trying to do the right thing. That begs the question, do you quit on people when they screw up? Do you quit on people when they screw up? Now, there are some of you that when you heard that, you immediately started to think of people who quit on you. This is not about you today, all right? This is about your situation and not the situation for those who've hurt you. Do you personally quit on people when they screw up? Do they have to play a perfect game with you in order to have relationship or fellowship? If so, you are not living like Christ. You got to give them some rope. Now, there's a difference between patience and affirmation. When someone screws up, that does not mean that the way to live like Christ is to go, "It's okay, good job, all right?" That's sinful as well. You don't affirm the bad behavior and you don't affirm the sin. But to have patience with that person while they work through the mess, while Christ purifies them, that is the godly thing that we do in Christ's image. Don't affirm the sin. Don't turn into the one who's handing out the trophy to everybody, all right? Make sure you're somebody who affirms the good and who doesn't quit on people when they get back into a mess or struggle. Let's keep moving. Last set of verses and we'll close today. Luke chapter 9, let's look at verses 43 through 45. Here's what it says. Remember, Jesus gives him back to his Father. It says, "And they were all amazed at the greatness of God. While everyone was marveling at all that Jesus did, he says to his disciples," stop right there for just a minute. There is a big, beautiful party going on because this man has been set free. This man's son has been set free. Not only that, because he was leading the charge, everybody's rejoicing and everybody's excited. You need to know that that is the context for what Jesus is about to say. There is a party going on around him, and everybody's so excited because of the things that God has done, and he's about to rebuke the disciples in the middle of the party. I mean, literally, it would be like this. If the party's going on over here, it's like him going, "Yay, yay, yay," and then he's like, "Listen to me, all right? This is what happens." You ever had that moment before with mom or dad or with your guardian? Okay, this is what happens right here. The party's there, he's smiling, he's happy, and then he lays down the law with the team. Look at what happens. Verse 43. It says, "And they were all amazed at the greatness of God. While everyone was marveling at all Jesus did, he said to his disciples," listen carefully to what I'm about to tell you, all right? Circle, highlight, and underline that, because this is Jesus laying down the law. He says, "The Son of Man is going to be betrayed into the hands of men." Stop right there. That is a short but powerful statement. And then look at their response in verse 45. "But they did not understand what he meant. It was hidden from them, so they could not grasp it." Look at this. "And they were too afraid to ask him about it." Stop right there. That shows you the mentality of the disciples. As Jesus is smiling at the crowd, he turns to them and says, "You have to do this. Guys, I'm about to go. You're going to be my hands and feet to this situation. And you decided to brush this man off. You decided to do nothing for him and for his family." He looks at him and says, "Listen carefully to what I'm about to say. This is your job. This is what you were made to do as believers in me." If you're taking notes, how do we live like Jesus in the midst of the mess? Number one, we got to leave the mountain. Number two, we got to address what's in front of us. Number three, we got to stay the course and be patient, expect imperfection. And number four, last but not least, we've got to remember that we were made to help. We've got to remember that we were made to help. In this particular circumstance, Jesus whips around the disciples and he says, look, remember, this is your job. You were made to do this. You were made to help in this circumstance. I am going to go, and then the plan is for you to carry on the mission. If you're taking notes, a little tweetable quote here at the end. We are God's chosen vessel for his message and his ministry. We are God's chosen vessel for his message and his ministry. If you don't help, it is very possible that you are the one that God sent to be his hands and feet to a particular circumstance. You're the vessel. You're his vessel for message and ministry. Silly example, and we'll close with this today. There's been an awful lot of talk about fecal matter today. I apologize for that, okay? Preached a lot of youth camps in the last few weeks. In our neighborhood, every now and again, you see mess on the sidewalk, okay? Just out here, and don't blog about this, all right? Some of you have, okay? But there's mess on the sidewalk, and it was not from your dog, okay? Or not from your animal. And here's what happens when you see the mess. What goes through your mind when you see the mess is, I can't believe they didn't pick this up. Or I can't believe someone didn't take care of their responsibility. And you see the mess. And here's the deal. You have the ability to scoop it up and get rid of it. You have the ability to be a good neighbor and clean up the mess. Every one of you in this room have the physical ability to do that, right? And yet, what do? A lot of times, myself included, we just step around it, think evil thoughts about the person who left it, and then maybe you even go home and blog about it, right? Or maybe you go home and write something about it. And here's what happens. The mess is still there. And not only are you having those feelings, but there's a whole lot of other people that walk past it and do it as well. Have you ever had this happen before? You ever had a mess from a dog in the middle of the street or in the middle of the sidewalk, and someone who clearly has no dog comes by and picks up the mess? Have you ever seen that happen before? Some of you are like, never, all right, never. It happens. And when the person does that, I'm telling you, even as a pastor, I'm like, that person must walk with God. You know what I mean? They didn't have to do that. That was something that they just chose to do to better the community, to better the environment, man, to better the drinking water in our city, right? They scoop it up and they make sure that it was disposed of. And you sit there and go, if that wasn't your dog, why would you do that? That's how we live like Christ. It's one thing to do with dog poop. It's another thing when it has to do with people. When someone is literally on the side of the road and we make the decision, I'm going to step over you and step past you because someone should do something about this. No, the example of Christ is that you do something about it, that you step up, that you help. And the world watches every minute of it, especially in this city. You don't have to help everybody, but if you'll stop and help somebody sometimes, you'd be shocked at the people that come up to you and go, you did this and I was watching. It's bizarre. Or your family members, that's the other crazy thing. They know you the best. When they watch a real life change take place, seeds of missional life planted in your spirit that all of a sudden begin to spring up, it is so beautiful that it causes them to stop and go, what's different about you? What changed? You're not the same person that you used to be. That's when the really cool stories take place. It begs the last question. Is your life a beautiful mess? Is your life a beautiful mess? When you look down at your feet, are they caked with mud because of the good things that you've been doing for the kingdom? Remember, you can't earn salvation through your good acts. It's only through the shed blood of Jesus Christ. We always say around here, it's not what you do that gets you eternity with God. It's believing in what Christ has done for us that covers our sin. But the people of God were created to do good works. Amen. What if you made the decision that when you come across the mess, that you're going to do your best to address it with a truly heavenly mind, but a heart for the people of our city, with a heart for the people in your office, for a heart for your roommates that don't do the dishes, right? What if you truly addressed it with the mind of Christ? If we do that, we'll see all sorts of cool stuff happen. I love you guys. Let's bow our heads for prayer.